Welcome to the
Idiots
Explaining
Entertainment
Extravaganza, only on GamingUncensored.com. D4.
Hey, what is up? Welcome to episode 3 of E4 2021, in which we are going to talk about things. I don't know. Theoretically, Ubisoft and Square is on the docket for this show. And
he's got the broadcast voice. I got the glasses. This is us trying really hard to be excited about where we're at. We're not.
Yeah,
it's not good.
It's okay. It's not awful, but it's just not E3 of past, right?
Right.
Like it's that's just going to be true of this whole thing. And again, we're hoping for Nintendo to maybe bail us out tomorrow. But it's just eh.
So
it's fine, but it's not great.
So here's the thing. We just watched the PC gaming show. And we'll talk about that as we go. But their big thing was that they were showing off this custom-built PC that you can win. And what I'm thinking is, we have not seen anything at E3 this year that is going to require me to build a new rig.
Yeah.
Like all we both really need to do is get a couple 2080s or a 3060 or something, slap it in there, and we're good to go for like the next 3 years. And that's horribly depressing.
Yeah.
Like, I want a reason to spend $3,000. I really do.
Yeah.
We don't have it.
We don't. No, that's definitely not happened yet. But we'll talk about some of the things that we've seen. And if something will get our money, which it's the age of COVID. We talked about that on the last show. It kind of is what it is. This is the first E3 back, but it's not really back because it's not a live event. It's pre-recorded stuff. And some of that's really good. One thing I want to point out, and I think Ubi did a good job with this, and I think Xbox, Bethesda did a good job with this, and Square, maybe a little bit. But I think the just presentation of the material has been pretty solid. Not having the stage show where you have the big wide camera angles with the screens on stage that you can't see any details on, and that kind of, like, I don't miss that. Right. That part of E3 was always a little obnoxious. The live crowd, where you're looking for crowd reactions and they're awkward sometimes. And like all that stuff is like, I kind of like the pre-package being able to show us stuff. But they just haven't shown us stuff that I care about, or that when I do care about it, they haven't shown me the stuff I want to see about it. We just have seen so little gameplay of anything, you know?
Like, there was a couple of times this morning where, like, well, that was kind of cool, but what is it?
What is it? Like, there's just games that, like, conceptually, like, this is a space, you know, sci-fi RPG. Okay, but how? But, like, what do you do?
Like, show us the game. We want to see let's talk about that shooter thing, the space shooter thing. And I saw, I can't remember the name of it.
I have a clue.
But there was this one shooter in the PC gaming show that just looked like another Overwatch knockoff or Apex or something like that.
Yeah.
And then Day 9 comes back and he's like, so that's a tactical shooter. And I was like, wait, what? like a turn-based tactical shooter. And I'm going, I would be interested in that, but I didn't see that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been a lot of E3. It's kind of maybe some decent games, but who knows, because you don't show us what they do. So all that said, let's jump into Ubisoft and Square, which is going to give us a little bit of that Square is the exception so far of at least on one game giving us a big chunk of gameplay so we know what it's going to be like, and that's a great thing. So we'll get into that in a second, but first with Yubi. Yubi, to be fair, did give us some gameplay too. It's just maybe games we don't care about as much. Right. They started with Rainbow Six Extraction, which is cool. You know, it's Rainbow Six, but it's got like monsters. I don't know.
So here was my thought on this when I saw it. My initial thought was, okay, Rainbow Six has officially jumped the shark if that's what they're doing with the next season. But then 20 minutes later, they showed the actual, like, Rainbow Six, and here's the new stuff we're doing for this year. So with that game, with the Extraction, now I'm looking at it going, you had to make a whole game of that? That couldn't have been like an expansion?
Yeah, it feels like a kind of weird in-between thing, right? That it's not quite a new game, but it's also not Rainbow Six Siege.
No.
Like, it's like, it's just kind of weird, like, expansion kind of it. I don't know what it is. Yeah.
So
I don't know. I've got a student who's big into Rainbow Six, and he just swears by it and loves it. And he did a whole project, and I have a video game project in one of my classes where they have to analyze video game sound. He did Rainbow Six for that. And he just went into all the crazy detail of like all this stuff about Rainbow Six. And I'm like, that's a world I don't understand. You know, like it's just a thing unto itself, and obviously it's a big thing, and so I get Ubisoft spending some time on that. I don't think that was a bad decision by Ubi at all. It's not our thing, but it is a big deal. Like Rainbow Six is a huge deal.
It's a huge, and it has been for a very, very, very long time.
Yeah. So it looks good. If that's your thing, you're probably excited about it. It's not our thing, but I think they were wise to start with that and spend some time on that.
Yeah.
So that was maybe the highlight of the whole Ubi, to be fair. Like the rest of it just, yeah. We saw a new Rocksmith. Rocksmith is the like Guitar Hero, but real. You actually plug in a real guitar to it.
I got like, okay, it's going to be interesting, going to surprise you. I got like 10 minutes on Rocksmith. Because I think this is the most brilliant idea for a piece of software that anybody has come up with in a really long time. I haven't played Rocksmith because my hands don't work.
Sure.
You probably played with it a little bit.
A long time ago,
And now they have this new thing, this service, this Rocksmith
Plus
or
yeah,
Pro.
That's a subscription service.
I'm going to surprise you, but I think it's brilliant.
I think it's a cool idea. I've always thought Rocksmith was a cool concept. And like I said, I played with it a little bit many, many years ago because Rocksmith's obviously been around a long time at this point. It didn't work great when I did it 8 years ago, 7 years ago or whatever. And I play guitar, you know, and really to play Rocksmith, you need to have at least kind of a basic understanding of how to play a guitar. It's not Rock Band. It's not Guitar Hero. It's not plastic controller 5 buttons thing. Like it's really utilizing guitar skills now. To what degree, it's a whole different question, but it is. And so you kind of have to have a basic background there to get it. And then if you have kind of a basic background, at some points it feels really clunky because it's a different way of doing it. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it, but I am going to try this. I'll pick it back up and see how
it, because the thing that caught me was that now they have integration with your cell phone and you can actually use that mic. And
that was one of the issues with it a long time ago. It's just really finicky. You had to have the USB adapter, which they still use, obviously, but there's other options as well. And it just didn't pick up well. If they fix some of those issues, it may be a better product now than it was then. It is a great concept. Taking the concept and making it into a great product or a great game is a little bit of a different thing.
Right.
So.
And like, this is really what, like, I don't consider Rocksmith a game. It's a utilitarian piece of software that does something that I think is really needed.
Yeah.
I mean, you work what you work with polished musicians all the time, but there are way more unpolished musicians than there are polished musicians. And I think this is a whole like industry. If somebody could figure out, you know.
And there is this idea, because, you know, this is my world's colliding here. This is like a gamified training tool as opposed to a game, right? Like it is a quote unquote game, but it's really got a different purpose to it. And there's actually more of these that exist that are focused on like drums or drum pads that are going to take, you know, like a digital drum kit. You can't do this with an acoustic drum kit nearly as easily. But if you've got an electronic like rolling kit or something, there are these training gamified products that you can plug your rolling kit into. And it's the same kind of thing. Like you're watching the screen, there's little indicators telling you when to hit the drums, you know, go whatever your groove is, blah, blah, blah. Like it's a cool way to create a training utility. I think it could be a big deal. I don't know that Ubisoft markets it right. Well, because I don't see it in my world of music education, right? When we talk about Rocksmith, the only place I ever see it is Ubisoft and video game news world. If they would take that and market it a little bit more into the music world, I think they could actually do something a little bit more productive.
I think the problem there is that they don't have the people that know that world.
Right. Because
the thing with the music world is that there's a lot of ins and outs and a lot of things that really don't work like any other business.
Yeah.
And you really have to know what you're doing when you get into that world, whether it's marketing or publicity or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a different deal. But I'm dealing with gamification as well for the virtual worlds and and trying to figure out how to teach people how to use this stuff. And like we just got out of a year of COVID where everybody's using Zoom. And so the push for my job and everything that I'm doing is, you can use Zoom, but you have these other tools that give you these other options that you can have the video in a virtual world and have all this other stuff. So gamification is everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to grow. It's going to continue to be a big thing. It's a really great educational tool. But you got to find those worlds where they collide. Right. I think that's a little bit of the issue here. And maybe part of it's still they're working out some of the kinks of making it a practical utility, of making it responsive enough, making it the kind of depth of it enough to actually be used as an educational tool more than just a gimmick. Because maybe that's the issue right now is it feels a little gimmicky and needs to be refined a little bit farther. So we'll see if they got there.
And it's got to be fun. And I have a real quick story to tell you. My brother has a 14-year-old at this point. I told you guys about her. Her name's Carter. She's going to start high school next year, which is mind-bending. but one of the things that I did in the last 6 weeks or something was went to her last orchestra concert, and she has decided going into high school she's not going to do orchestra, she's going to play basketball full time. And I didn't think I would be affected this way, but when she told me that, I was hugely depressed.
Yeah,
because she's been playing since she was like, you know, second, third grade. And I just want to, like, grab her and check, like, don't give that up. Because not everybody has that thing.
Yeah.
And when you get older, it's hard to pick it up. Yes. I mean, part of the reason the music industry is the way it is and only a select group of people make it is because there's a whole ton of people that just really aren't that good.
Yeah.
Like, they're just not.
Yes.
You know? And so I hate to see that given up. So to bring that back around to this, part of the reason I think she's given it up is it's not fun.
Yeah.
you know, it's not fun.
Yeah.
So I think these tools are necessary.
Yeah, especially at a young age. If you're wanting to be a professional musician, there becomes a point that it's work.
Yeah.
Like, I work with professional musicians every day. They don't always have fun playing their instrument. But they do more often than not, you know. Yeah. But sometimes it's just work. Sometimes you just show up and do your job, which may be hitting drums or strumming a guitar.
Yeah.
That may be music you don't care about or whatever. Like, that's part of it. For sure, the music industry is not nearly as sexy as it often seems.
Yep.
But that's the reality of being a professional. But if you want to get people to that world, mm-hmm. you've got to make it fun when they're younger. And I think, yeah, gamification is a big key to that. So that's Rocksmith. A few other things we saw. Riders Republic, which is their kind of all extreme sports thing. Snowboarding, BMX, paragliding. I don't know what all was in there. Tons of stuff.
I'm going to sound old, but we got a text from your wife earlier with a picture of your kid sitting on the back of a horse with a smile on her face. I have an issue with these types of games because, especially for the people that they're marketed to, the people that they're marketed to need to go outside and actually try this stuff. And that's coming from a guy that's in a wheelchair and can't.
Right.
Like, if I could get on a skateboard or a snowboard or whatever, like, I might suck. But if I had the ability, I'd at least try.
Sure.
And so I struggle with a game like this. It's like, here's all these outdoor activities indoor.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you sound like an old man.
Yeah.
I know. I don't exactly know who the game is, like, marketed for. Like, I don't think it's necessarily, like, kids, like teenagers or whatever. I don't know that they care.
No.
But I don't know who... like, this is something, I don't know, maybe when I was, you know, younger, when I was in college, like, that was when, like, the X sports were really big, the X games were really big, and so we watched X games, like, in college pretty religiously, and so those kind of games, like, playing Tony Hawk, obviously, in SSX when we were younger, was a lot of fun, but I don't feel like that moment is here, and it's, I don't know, maybe it'll be cool with, like, an open world thing where you can just jump around and explore these environments, but it's one of those that if it was on Game Pass, I'd pick it up and play it for, like, you know, a couple hours and say, cool, that was kind of fun, whatever, and move on with my life. But it's not one I would ever pay for.
Nope.
And that's, again, where we were before. We saw Just Dance because it's Ubisoft, and we're always going to have Just Dance. And so,
yeah. I didn't know the person.
I know. I'm so old.
Track. I mean, you're in music, and so I thought maybe Tommy knows this guy. No idea.
Whatever. It's not my world. It's not my thing.
Yeah.
we got some details about Assassin's Creed Valhalla DLC, The Siege of Paris, looks so good.
I really, look, I'm going to say something that's going to surprise you. I really want to play this.
I do too.
I really, like, we have this massive growing list of stuff that we need to play together. Assassin's Creed Valhalla is one of those games. Like, if you decided to pick that up on PS5 and stream it, I ain't mad at you.
Yeah.
Because I'm interested in that.
Me too. I really want to play it. And it's supposedly really good. Like, the reviews for it, people talking about it, it's the third of a streak of really great Assassin's Creed games. It's also apparently just massive, and that's just, it's such a barrier for me, honestly. Knowing that it's a big game, because I have so many other games I need to play, it is so hard to pick up a game that I know is that big. And just knowing that I probably, because I never finished Odyssey.
Right.
I loved Assassin's Creed Odyssey, but just at some point, like, I moved on. I started playing. It was Final Fantasy VII Remake came out, and I just had to go, okay, like, I'm kind of done with this because I'm playing something else. And I know Valhalla will be the same way. And there's something that bums me out about that. Just naturally, like, I'm like, I don't want to get into this world knowing that I'm probably going to leave it before I'm done with it.
Well, and that's a very interesting thing that I think we need to think about and bring up at the end of our time here, because it's something that I've been thinking a lot about. I've got 70 hours in The Witcher. I've got 70 hours plus in Horizon. I've got 70 or 80, 90 hours in Mass Effect Andromeda. I've got a ton of hours in all of these games. I'm not close to finishing any of them.
Right.
And it's just like, I understand that there are people that have time to do this.
Yeah.
But I don't think I ever have. I mean, I think there was a 3-year period in my life from like 14 to like 17. And that's it.
Yeah. High school summers were the glory years of being able to play video games. You know, like you didn't have school, you could just sit inside and play video. It's hot. Who wants to go outside? Old man stuff here, right? Yeah. But yeah, that's what we did in high school. We just sat inside and played video games all day. But yeah, that's just not an option anymore.
I really do. I feel bad because I have, it's not like I have 10 hours in every game
right.
on my system. I have a chunk of time.
Yeah.
In each one of these games, and they're all great.
Yeah.
And I want to finish them, but it can't.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Speaking of, this one won't be as long, so we'll get to this one. Far Cry 6 showed up again. We've talked so much Far Cry 6 already. And honestly, the presentation at UB wasn't like bigger. Like, they already did the big reveal thing, like, a week ago, that they showed off some of the gameplay and that kind of stuff. And so, they had a kind of narrative clip with Giancarlo Esposito, which was great. I'm super pumped about him being the antagonist there and should be good. But maybe the more interesting thing that they revealed was the season pass, which season pass things. Whatever. Give me DLC, whatever. Anyway, they're doing a season pass, and part of what they're doing with the season pass is they're letting you play as the villains from the previous three games. And so Voss from Far Cry 3, Pagan Men from 4, and then Joseph Seed from 5. Who are all very kind of iconic. We mentioned this on the Microsoft show. I couldn't tell you anything about the protagonists in any of those games, but I can tell you about each one of those villains. You know, like they're each memorable. But I don't know exactly what it was. Like they kind of showed it, but I don't know exactly what you're doing as these guys, you know? And so it was kind of... Far Cry's also done these weird things. They had the, like, Blood Dragon thing, which was a big deal, and people really enjoyed that. They had the, like... What was the one called where it was like in like primeval times, like you're like a Cro-Magnon or whatever. Like, I don't remember what it was called. That one didn't really take off. Like they do these weird kind of in between Far Cry things that are kind of meh. And I worry that this is going to be meh. You know, like the villains in Far Cry are great because they're not the player character.
No.
That's the brilliance of them is like, you want to hate them, and they're so well put together in these really complex ways when most of the time the protagonists in these games are just dumb, you know, just like idiots.
Well, look, for the first two Far Cry games, that's what they were.
Yeah.
Just your basic bad guy on an island somewhere. Yeah. And then Far Cry 3 came, and that's when all of this started. That's what I was talking about yesterday. If there's one series that I'd like to go from 3 to current, it's Far Cry.
Yeah, for sure. After that, we got Mario plus Rabbids, a new game in the Mario plus Rabbids series. And so this is Nintendo and Ubisoft colliding, which is pretty cool.
Still
the first
weird.
One was fun. Kind of, you know, XCOM-ish Mario Rabbids game. Yes. Very weird. This one's called Sparks of Hope. It's, I don't know, it's more of the same if you knew what Mario plus Rabbids was before. Again, which was a solidly fun game. This is more of that. But one thing to point out here, I think Jason Schreier pointed this out on Twitter, is the game looks better than what the Switch can do right now. So it's the, we talked about this before. This is the, like,
the Switch Pro exists, and they're showing us stuff off the Switch Pro, but they're not able to tell us yet that this is the Switch Pro.
Because that's coming on Tuesday.
We'll see if they announce that on Tuesday or not, but we're going to see lots of pretty Nintendo games, I guarantee that. And then we got the one last thing, which from Ubisoft could be Beyond Good and Evil, could be Skull and Bones, could be a new Splinter Cell, could be Ghost Recon. There's a billion things from Ubi that could have been really exciting one last things, right? And what we got was Avatar. James Cameron Avatar, movie tie-in video game. And I just was so let down by that.
I don't. Okay. All right. So, I haven't seen Airbender.
Yeah.
Have you seen any? Okay.
The other Avatar?
Yeah, the animated.
Right.
Yeah, that's
not related to this world.
Right. So here's,
those are apparently cool.
Here's my question on the Avatar thing. Why is it still going?
It's still going because there's two new movies apparently coming at some point. They've been coming for 10 years at this point, whatever it is. And I honestly don't get the hype from the original. Like, it was a fine movie. And obviously, like, the special effects and all that stuff, the James Cameron thing and on and on. But it just...
It was all right.
It was an all right movie. Like,
it's a
rare movie that I actually saw twice in the theater, because I went and watched it once just when it came out because of all the hype. And then I saw it with my family at a Dome IMAX, like the whole thing with the Dome IMAX, which was a trippy experience, but it was kind
of
cool.
I've never been to one of those.
Yeah, it was fun. But I only saw the movie twice because of a gimmick, right? Because it was this IMAX movie, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I've never watched it again. And I've had no, like, desire to see it again. I wouldn't stop on it if I was flipping through channels and it was on. Like, I just don't care that much. And I don't know anybody that's, like, a super fan of Avatar, right?
Nope.
I just don't get the hype around this franchise. It just... Like, there's going to be more movies come out, and they'll be pretty, because that's what they do. And okay, it'll be probably, you know, kind of cheesy summer blockbuster storylines, and can be fun, and will be something that you watch. But I don't need a game.
So how does this game make Ubisoft any money? Like, who's going to play this?
That's really my question. Unless it's a really fantastic game that outperforms what the movie is. And I say that knowing that the movie is the highest grossing film of all time, right? Like, just recently took back over that spot, I think, because of a re-release in China or something like that. Like, the movie is a huge deal. Like, everybody saw it. But I just don't know anybody that cares that much. It's this weird thing that is, like, both ubiquitous, but doesn't seem to have like a fan base that's really adamant about it.
So I think part of it is that we grew up when James Cameron was a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, he had Terminator, and then he had what is that one? It's my favorite, The Abyss. He had The Abyss. Yeah. He had there's another one in there. I mean that guy's a big deal, and everybody that's our age has been waiting for the next big James Cameron thing, and the last Terminator was supposed to be it, and it wasn't. Like, I will tell you, the last Terminator is pretty good. I watched it, it's pretty good. It's not Terminator 2,
right?
But it's pretty good. And everybody's waiting on that next big James Cameron thing, and he's standing over there going, "It's coming." Just hang out. I've still got it. Just hang out.
Yeah.
You know.
James Cameron obviously, like, peaked in the early. I don't know. I'd say that again. Avatar is the highest grossing film of all time. I think that's true still. And so it's hard to say he peaked in the early 90s with Terminator, but that's how it feels to me, you know?
Right.
But obviously there's people that
ate up Avatar. The game didn't look that crazy.
No.
Like it just, it looked like it's fine, but I don't care enough about that world to go play a game.
Okay, so can we talk about the underlying issue that we're having? Like, all these games look good, but they don't look great. And this is probably just you and I that feel this way. But I sent you a text before you got here after I saw Horizon Forbidden West. And I said to you that my prediction was that we're not going to see anything that looks that good at E3. And the issue that you and I are having, I think, is all this stuff is nice. And I'm not just talking about the visuals. All the stuff that we've seen so far is nice. But Forbidden West is three steps above all of it.
Yeah. There's definitely something to that. Avatar's not getting me excited no matter what. Right? If we had seen Forbidden West a week ago, the Avatar's still not doing anything for me. Halo could have. Right?
Right.
Like, there's games that could have that didn't. And there's, you know, I think some legitimacy to the idea that we've just also know we've got this other really great looking stuff coming that does diminish that.
So,
but I do think just overall, like, I don't think it's even a comparative thing. I think it's just E3 is just kind of down this year.
Well,
but imagine if Sony was here. And instead of Sony putting out that Forbidden West thing a week ago that they did it at E3, we'd be talking about E3 in a totally different
Would immediately win. And folks, I got to be honest with you. If you haven't seen it, we're not talking about pre-rendered stuff. We're not talking about cinematics.
Gameplay.
We're talking about in-game, spectacular-looking environments, great acting, the whole nine yards. It is absolutely fantastic.
And the things that we've been missing from E3 for the most part, until we get to the next game we're going to talk about. There's one kind of exception to this that came from Square.
Yeah.
That is a tie-in game. That's not a movie tie-in, a comic book tie-in. That there's a movie. We'll get into it in just a second. But that's the exception to me because they did show us a chunk of gameplay and everything else. So we'll transition to Square Enix. I just want to make a point while we're transitioning to Square Enix that I have my Buster Sword shirt on.
Yeah!
So I was excited about some Final Fantasy, which we got some, but not what I was hoping for from Final Fantasy. We'll get into that in just a second. But let's really talk about the thing that the game that so far I think both of us are most surprised about looking really good from E3, and that's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wow. So
not something we were anticipating saying.
I gotta be honest. The first movie's good, second movie's good, they're funny, they made me laugh. I'm not the biggest Guardians fan. I think that I'm probably gonna like this game better than I like the movies.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. So the game is not licensed off the movie. Star-Lord doesn't look like Chris, whatever his name is, from Parks and Rec. He'll always be Andy Dwyer to me, so that's the only name I can remember with him. He doesn't look like him at all. He's blonde, has a very different kind of aesthetic. And all the other characters are more based off of the comic book look, but don't look like the comic book characters either. It's kind of somewhere in between what the comic book characters look like, what the movie characters look like, and like Rocket and Gamora and all those. Yeah. They all have, you know, kind of a much more specific look. And so it looks good, and it's stylized in a similar way to the Avengers game is. But that's where the similarities really end. It's not a service game. It is a single-player title. You are playing as Star-Lord. You are leading the group of Guardians, but you're playing as Star-Lord, and you're, like, issuing commands in the gameplay. And it looks like, again, it's hard to tell until you get your hands on it, but it looks like it will be fun to play. And just a point here, they gave us, like, 10 minutes of gameplay on the thing. We've been complaining about nothing showing us gameplay. We finally got something with gameplay, and we're super pumped about it because it's not just a theoretical, like, it's Halo, but you know, like, yeah, it's got multiplayer. Yeah, it's got a campaign. But like, what does it feel like? What does it look like? And that kind of stuff. This showed us, like, it gave us the fun stuff. It gave us all the kind of narrative, cinematic, pre-rendered stuff. But then they dropped them in the game and let them play it for, you know, 10 minutes. And it was edited. It was kind of choppy. They tried to speed it up some. So it wasn't super smooth. But it was still really great to see specifically a game that we don't know how it was going to play, how it plays. And that got us excited.
Well, and the thing is, it's not that it was just gameplay. We're not psyched because they just gave the gameplay. It was polished gameplay.
Yeah.
And it was funny.
Yeah.
And it was well put together. It was well scripted. And it was like, here, you're playing Guardians of the Galaxy and we're sitting here watching this thing going, I want to play that.
Yeah.
Because we're like snickering at it, watching this trailer that's hacked together with this gameplay. It's really funny and we want to play that.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks good. And that's, again, something that we weren't necessarily thinking we were going to say. But it may be the next really great Marvel game. And that's something that I'm okay having more of. So you'll probably hear us talk about that one again. Then from there, not a whole lot else great from Square. We'll go through it really quick. They did announce a remaster of all of the Final Fantasy 1 through 6, all the pixel base. It's called Pixel Remaster, that's coming to Steam and mobile devices, which not console at this point, which is interesting in its own right, would be great on the Switch, by the way. Hopefully it'll get there eventually. But if you haven't played those original Final Fantasy games, here's another chance to play them in a re-release, hopefully ported well. That's one of the really struggle things with these Final Fantasy titles, is that when they got the mobile versions, they screwed with a lot of things, and these games don't play as well as they did originally.
So my question to you out of all of this is, how many more times are you going to rebuy this title?
So I'm going to be really honest here on a couple things. I've bought a couple of the classic Final Fantasy games on mobile. Maybe. I think just one. I think I bought Final Fantasy IV at one point. Mm-hmm. I own a copy of Final Fantasy 3/6 on Super Nintendo. Last time I played it on Super Nintendo. I've also played it on emulators, which I didn't pay for, obviously.
Right.
But I do own a copy of that game. That's my favorite game of all time. And so I own that copy, a copy of that on Super Nintendo still. And last time I picked it up was many years ago. And so I'm ready to pick it up again. So I might pick up this collection. It is 6 really long games.
Yeah.
Like, you're picking up, like, 400 hours worth of game there.
Well, but in your defense, they're really long games, but they're not 100 hour games. They're long games.
They vary, yeah.
But they're long games for the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
So
And I'm never gonna play the original Final Fantasy again. You know, it's fine, but it's those later ones, 4, 5, and 6, that are really the ones that you probably want to go back to at this point. So that's coming, as is Legend of Mana, doing a kind of modern remaster of that. They talked a little bit about Marvel Avengers, so that's still a thing, obviously. The service game, the Marvel service game, is still out there. Big news here is the War for Wakanda expansion, and so you got Black Panther in there, which is great and maybe a fun element to that game. And there's people playing that game that like it, but it just hasn't been obviously what Square wanted it to be.
And we talked about it yesterday. So if we were together more often, we'd play it.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no qualms about that. If we were getting together on Saturday afternoons and playing games once a week like we used to, yeah, that would be on the list.
They showed a little bit of Babylon's Fall, which is a game we've seen before. It's another service game, and so I immediately, my interest just isn't really there. It's a high fantasy service game, which is, so it's kind of like the Square JRPG version of a service game instead of the Western Marvel version of a service game they did. One interesting thing, I'll have just an aside on that. The Square conference is really interesting because obviously Square's always been so kind of JRPG heavy. But now there's these real Western titles, things like the Marvel games and like Life is Strange, which is going to pop up here in just a second. And then there's the very Japanese titles, Final Fantasy, Babylon's Fall, and some other stuff in there. Like, it's just jarring to watch this, to go back and forth between different aesthetics, the different feels of those different types of games, of going, this is all coming from the same publisher, but it's kind of where Square is now. That's what they do.
But can I say they did a good job compared to a lot of what we saw? Take these off. compared to a lot of what we saw, they did a nice job.
Yeah.
I mean, it's well put together. And I'm not complaining.
Yeah. Life is Strange, we got two bits of news. One is that they're remastering the original, which you made the point of, why?
Yeah, I mean, look.
I mean, it looks a little better.
I like that we're doing remasters. That's great. But you're basically remastering a game that's less than 5 years old.
Yeah.
I don't need that.
Yeah. But if you haven't played it, this is a great chance to get into it and play it. And I'm sure it did take much work to remaster it because, again, it just came out fairly recently and already looks good. Then they talked more about the new title in the franchise, which is called True Colors, and they showed that off a little bit. That one really looks pretty. Obviously, watching the difference between where they were with the original Life is Strange is showing some of the remaster stuff to where True Colors is now. Like, you really see their progression there. That comes out later this year, which is pretty cool.
So the thing that I can say about Life is Strange, we talk about game lengths and how big everything is and how much time we are lacking. The thing with Life is Strange is that they're just right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they're just right. You can sit down and you can play through one. It's a great story, great acting, the whole nine yards. And it's not going to take you 8,000 hours.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They are very well put together. Nice package. You don't feel like that's a, I could do a Life is Strange game in between other things I'm playing.
Yeah.
I can't do Assassin's Creed Valhalla between other things. It has to be the thing, right? Like, yeah. Life is Strange kind of fills a gap, which is nice. So. Last thing we got from Square was Final Fantasy, but it was this Souls-like Final Fantasy from Team Ninja that we had been hearing about that kind of already leaked out. It's called Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origin. It didn't really do anything for me, to be honest with you.
Look. So, just because you can do something with a franchise, it doesn't really mean that you should.
And Square is really bad about this with Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
And real hit or miss. So kudos to them for trying it, because every so often they hit one that people like actually dig. Like, I maybe even put like Final Fantasy Tactics into that category. That they're like, hey, let's do something weird. And then Final Fantasy Tactics is great.
Yeah.
And so, like, every so often you do something that's against the grain of what your kind of standard thing is, and it works. And then you try to do a Final Fantasy Souls-like or a Final Fantasy Battle Royale thing that they're doing with Final Fantasy VII. So I will note, there is a demo for this already sitting on the PlayStation. And so we may fire it up and see and have some, like,
we have to fire it up.
We really need to.
We're probably going to make fun of it.
Sure. The question is how long can we stand it? But we'll see. But it's not one that I'm looking forward to.
No.
And this is a stupid thing to maybe complain about with the E3 stuff. But the one last thing of E3 so far has sucked, right?
Yeah.
We got Avatar. We got the Redfall, right? Is that what it's called? The new Arcane game from Xbox and Bethesda. And we got this Final Fantasy thing from Square. The one that paid off was the Game Fest kickoff, where we got Elden Rings as the one last thing, which was great. That was a really fun. By the way, that show so far has been my favorite thing.
I said it yesterday, and I'll say it again. I'm sure that Jeff Keighley was doing fine.
Yeah.
And he doesn't need more money from anybody else. But if we're going to, if E3 is going to continue, the ESA needs to hire Jeff Keighley if they haven't already. Yeah. And just let him do what he does.
Which he did before. Like, he used to be the E3 guy. He was the ESA's guy for that. And then hasn't been. Was it this year? Obviously, last year was a mess. But yeah, I hope that for whatever E3 is next year, that they go, hey, can you come back, Jeff, and help us out? Because Jeff can put together some really compelling content.
It's very clear that dude's working 80 hours a week. Yeah. And whatever he charges is totally worth it. I don't think there's a way in the world that he can play all the games that he talks about.
Sure. Zero chance. But he does his research.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I really, if E3 is going to continue, and I'm not talking about this package thing. Yes. I'm talking about E3 in general. Somebody hire that guy and give him whatever he asked for, because he's doing a better job than all of you.
Yeah. Suddenly the Game Awards has become one of my like most anticipated events of the year. Like, he just does a really good job. And all that to say, like, so far, and I know this E3, we'll talk about this when we finish up with E3 stuff too, but just kind of right in the middle of it right now, impressions, this E3 being as weird as it is, and COVID, understanding that there's a lot going on that's made it difficult to do what they've done in the past, but as it stands right now, E3 is not the premier gaming event. It is a gaming event.
Yep.
It is not heads and tails above Gamescom or Tokyo Games Show or the Game Awards.
I would venture that Gamescom is a bigger deal and has been for a couple of years.
I don't know if I'd go that far yet, but they're on similar footing at a bare minimum. And I think some of that was inevitable. We've been talking about this for years with E3, even before COVID. And so COVID's an easy thing to blame right here, but this has been happening for a long time. The democratization of the internet, of bringing people new ways to get this information. You just don't need an E3 like you used to. And so we're just seeing the kind of evolution of whether or not it makes sense for publishers to keep doing this. And Sony's not here. Because Sony has made a bet, and they haven't really been wrong with it for the past couple of years, that they don't need to be here.
And we got to be honest, we're not talking trash on anybody, because I remember when we started, and it was us and 12 other people, it was easy to do what we do and put together content and be competitive, and people were listening and paying attention, and we had to worry about bandwidth and all of that.
Sure.
And now here we are 15 years later, and everybody has a podcast, everybody's doing video, everybody looks slick. This is hard.
Yeah.
And so we're not talking trash on the ESA and saying, oh, you guys suck and you just need, we're not. We realize it's hard, it's very saturated. There's a lot of people out there that are making money that are better than us, that I'm really jealous of, because I look at it and I'm like, we could do that, but this is hard.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the ESA is running into right now.
Yeah. And when Sony can just put out Horizon gameplay on YouTube and everybody goes and eats it up, like, you don't need the ESA to be any part of that.
Yep.
Why would you want somebody else to be a part of your creative process if you don't have to?
Yep.
And that's what we're figuring out. And that's going to be the thing with E3. Now, all that said, one of the things we're going to spend some time on is talking about all these indie games. And that's my biggest fear, is that if E3 kind of goes away, if E3 doesn't have the presence of a Microsoft or a Nintendo or a Sony, which they don't have the presence of a Sony right now, and it goes away, that all of these indie games that get a highlight here because people are paying attention are going to lose that. And I'd be really bummed about that, because I'm not going out and searching out a, you know, showcase of whatever indie developer, because I don't know they exist.
Well,
they need somewhere that they can get that, exposure.
That's why, if that happens, and I think you're right, if that happens and and the E3 is not the place, that's when somebody like Jeff needs to step in and say, like, okay, all you indie people, you're going to come work with me. I would watch that. Like, if somebody put together an indie show and says it's all indie games and these are people that you've never heard of, and like, I'm about to say something that's probably going to get us in trouble. You need to be very clear about what an indie developer is.
Sure.
When you put them into this show, because the Killing Floor guys are not indie anymore. They're not. They have their own. They have enough money, and they're big. They're big enough studio that they're not. But
yeah, that's an arbitrary definition of indie, though, right?
Well,
that's an indie developer is independent of a big publisher.
That's
right?
Not the appropriate. It's not the appropriate word. I'll think of another word. But they're not. But they're not up and coming anymore, I think is the appropriate.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, if you've got a track record like that, a big franchise that has a secure fan base, yes. But even like something like Replaced, is that the name of the game from yes. the Xbox show?
Yep.
Like, I don't want to miss that one either, you know? And that's not probably going to be shown anywhere else because that's I think it's an Xbox Games, you know, an Xbox studio that's putting that together or whatever. And so, even stuff like that, that's part of the big companies, like if they're not doing a showcase of a bunch of games like they are here. Now, again, Microsoft could go do that on their own. They don't need the ESA to do that. Right. That's what Sony's figured out. But as of right now, we don't have any announcement of Sony doing a game showcase. They did the Horizon thing, which was great. They may do something for whatever other franchises, right? They did a thing with Ratchet and Clank a couple weeks ago too, right before it came out, showing off some new features and that kind of stuff with Ratchet and Clank, and that's great. But I really like these showcases where it intermingles different things that I wouldn't otherwise see, because I show up in the hopes to see something like Halo, you know.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's drawing a lot of people into watching the Xbox show, is that they want to see Halo, and then when they get there, they get to see Replaced.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, that looks really cool. And that's a standout right now from E3 that you wouldn't have known about if Halo wasn't also on the docket, or, you know, whatever big games it is. That's my fear if these start getting spread real thin, is that we'll lose some of that stuff. So,
and I think that's a valid fear. But bringing up, I hate to keep going back to Sony, but they're doing... they're encroaching on a lot of people's territory. It's not just the ESA. I think they're going to end up pushing Microsoft at some point, because their big games, whether it's Horizon or Uncharted, or their big titles are coming to PC, and they're essentially saying, we don't need anybody.
Yeah,
like we can put our games on Game Pass, but we don't have to. Like, they just threw Horizon on Steam, and it's fantastic. Like, I did not pay for it. Duff paid for it. Thank you, Duff. But it was totally worth Duff's money.
Yeah,
and if Duff had not paid for it, Horizon is one. Knowing what I know now, if he had not paid for it, Horizon's worth every bit of $70. And that's the way Forbidden West will be. That's the way all the Naughty Dog games will be. Like, Sony, I think, has it figured out, in that we've got a way to show you games, and we're going to show you games that you have to pay for, and you're going to like it.
I mean, they're just doing different things, right? Like, yeah. That's not what Microsoft's doing. And I don't think Microsoft feels that pressure. I take that back a little bit. They do a little bit. They bought Bethesda.
Yeah.
That was their answer to Sony having great first-party single-player titles. Is, we're going to go pick up one of the publishers that does big single-player games. And now they've got Starfield as an exclusive. We don't know what it is yet. But that's obviously what Microsoft's trying to do, is compete on that front so that they have those exclusives that are big deals too. Bethesda is a really big deal. Like, it's a huge thing that Bethesda is part of Microsoft now. Yeah. Like, mind-blowing. And they're doing the Game Pass thing. And so they're doing different things, obviously. It's just weird. The game industry is just weird right now, you know?
Like, it's weird. It
went from, like, such direct competition that each one of these companies was really kind of competing for the exact same space to now, like, they're just doing really different things. And it makes an even better argument of why you got to own them all than they maybe did before.
But, and see, that's the interesting thing to me is you do need to own them all. Whether I like it or not, right. We really need an Xbox.
Yeah.
We really need to get an
Xbox. Just for Game Pass on console.
Yep.
That's why you need it. It's not because they have the best software, which they have some compelling software, but Sony has way better software as far as we're concerned.
Yeah.
But Game Pass is just a no-brainer. Like, they've made that a thing that you got to have. Yeah. It is brilliant, and good on Microsoft for doing that. So
it to me, the industry is getting to a place where it's got to change or it's going to die. Or not die, but crash.
Like, I mean, it just has to change.
Yeah.
Like, it just has to change. Like, there's no other option. It just has to change because the world has changed. Like, technology has changed. It's just a different thing than it used to be. I saw a rumor that Sony was in talks with Epic to make the Epic Game Store the exclusive place that Sony titles would launch, you know, and to build that, you know, as like Sony and Epic having this big partnership or whatever. How crazy would that be? That's not outside the realm of possibilities. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that's feasible, right? Like, it's just something like that 5 years ago, if you would have said Sony's going to release their games on an Epic platform on PC, we'd go, that makes no sense. Like, those words don't belong in a sentence together. And now, like, yeah, that's feasible. That could totally happen. It wouldn't be shocking.
It wouldn't be shocking. And we talked about Epic a couple weeks ago and how my library is growing. and it continues to grow. Like, they are, Steam is still my favorite platform.
Sure.
But they are a necessary add-on to Steam.
Yep.
That you have to have. Like, if I can only have two, I would take Epic and I would take Steam and all of these other platforms, whether it be Uplay or Origin or whatever, all of them could go away.
Sure.
And then the Game Pass is the third.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, Game Pass before Epic, right?
Well, yeah, I would say that.
But Game Pass is a different thing. Game Pass is a subscription service, which Steam and Epic, neither one are. And so it's just, the game world's weird right now.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about that more. We should probably wrap this show. But that went down rabbit trail. That was kind of fun.
We found a way to entertain ourselves. Yeah.
Like, we were really worried about that.
Like, what we were sitting here going, what are we going to talk? Like, we promised these people content. What are we going to give them?
Yeah. And circling back just really quickly to Square, because I want to just point out two things that we didn't see that I'm really bummed we didn't see. One is any new Final Fantasy VII remake information. Right. It just didn't even come up. They didn't even talk about integrating it. I don't think. Like, it just didn't come up at all. And then anything about Final Fantasy 16, which they teased us last year, and they just didn't show us anything new on it either. That game's a long way out. Final Fantasy 7 Remake Part 2 or whatever they're going to call it feels like it's probably a long way out as well. That bums me out because I want both of those games.
So the interesting thing to me, based on what you just said, is that I feel like, I don't know if it's 6 months, I don't know if it's a year, but we have whatever that time period is where it's just more time to play the stuff we've already got.
Yes.
Like, there's nothing here so far, and I don't think there's going to be anything where we're like, oh, I got to upgrade, or oh, I got to have this game. Yep. Like, We're about to get 6 months, a year and a half more of just play what you've already got because you've got too much to play.
Yes.
So,
which is fine.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing. And this is my speculation just randomly off the top of my head as we were talking about that. Sony's probably doing something in the next month or two, right? There's a good chance that Sony's going to do their own thing kind of post E3 to capitalize on the summer thing. There's a really good chance that one or both of those Final Fantasies show up in a Sony show as opposed to their dedicated show here. Because that's where Final Fantasy 7, 16, or Final Fantasy 16 showed up last year was at the PlayStation 5 thing, right? Yeah. Like one of their kind of announced things for PlayStation 5. And so totally feasible that that's when we see Final Fantasy show back up, the new Final Fantasy 7 remake or 16. So I think that's likely. And then Sony owns the summer with that show.
I mean, we do, because you know what they showed with Forbidden West. It was done well enough. Like, I've been gushing about it for the last week. It was done well enough. You know they got more.
Yeah.
So there'll be more of that. There'll be the Final Fantasy stuff. There'll be, you know.
Supposedly, The Last of Us is getting remade, the first one, which is weird, but cool, whatever. Like, by all means, like, knock yourself out.
Like
Naughty Dog's probably working on something else.
I was about to say, we're going to see something that is Naughty Dog related. I think Sony could very easily.
Spider-Man 2, we know it exists. Like, they've got games that could blow us all away. None of which we're going to see this year, most of which we probably won't see next year either. But they've got games, and so who knows? We'll see what happens.
I'm so glad that this show turned out the way it did, because I'm really worried. I really was. We're going to try some stuff later today with the PS5 and some live broadcasts, so we'll see how that goes. I'm glad that we're not going to be on video. It's going to be us talking as we play through some things. I'm looking forward to that, not being on video. We're just not good at video at all.
But it's been fun from Jamie's living room. So,
And we got more coming.
We've
got more video shows. We've got more video content.
We'll do some trailers for Patreon.
Yeah.
Again, as we mentioned before, if you're not on Patreon, this is the best time to do it. GamingUncensored.com. Click on that Become a Patron link there. So, good time to be involved. Lots of content coming your way. And we're just really pumped to play some games here in a little bit.
And I talked about it on the last show. You guys need to talk to us. We've got Facebook. We've got Twitter. We want to know how you feel, because you're hearing how we feel.
Right.
And I
feel like we're really against the grain this year.
Yeah.
I feel like we are outliers on what everybody else thinks. And I would like to hear people who listen to the show probably agree with us at least some of the time. If you're like, maybe not, maybe you listen to the show because you love hating us, which is fine too.
Yeah,
we want to hear from you too. Like, we just want to hear opinions and see if we are truly out on an island like we feel like we are.
Well, I mean I'm fairly certain that we are. I don't think there's any question about it, but I want to know. But my thing is, I know there has to be something that we're missing, some angle that we're not seeing, because I'm looking at somebody like Sam on the Facebook page that for a month and a half just put his gaming stuff down and started building guitars and doing all kinds of cool music stuff. And like, he just like, okay, I'm out for a little while. I want to know, like, does this bring him back? Does this interest somebody like Spider? That Spider Weiss, that gaming is not all that he does.
Sure.
I want to hear from some of those guys that I know that they're looking at this kind of in the same vein that we are. And I want to see if we're missing something, because a lot of what we're hearing on the internet are people that are in the industry. It's the IGNs, it's the GameSpots, it's the people that are paid to make this thing work.
Right.
And I'm not disparaging that.
Right.
They just, I'd be shocked if somebody from one of those places came out and actually said, wow, we really don't know. I mean, they might feel that, but this sure. is what this is what they do. So I'm wondering if it's all of that or if we really are way out there.
Yeah, it's a good question. So yeah, let us know if you're watching or listening to us. You have thoughts, we want to hear them. So definitely let us know.
GamingUncensored@gmail.com or the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210 or Twitter at PodcastGU. Send us a message over there or on Facebook. Search Gaming Uncensored on Facebook. Come join our community there. Lots of ways to talk to us. We just want to hear from you. We'll get it. Whichever of those ways you choose to communicate with us, we'll get it.
I'm going to do something I should not do live on there, but you can cut if you want. I would like to do, if you guys will step out there and do that, I would like to do a 20 or 30 minute kind of communication show, talking about some of the comments that we actually have.
Sure.
If you guys will post, I would like to actually spend some time on the air talking over those posts and talking about some of the stuff you guys bring up. So
for sure,
definitely get on the platforms, whatever it is, Facebook, Twitter, the phone line, Gmail, and we will use that content.
Yep, for sure.
For right now, I think that's pretty much it. This is Gaming Uncensored, continuing coverage of E3 2021. It's E4 Explained by Two Idiots, and we are out.